Welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success. Welcome to The Cap, where we are here to speak with college reps and other professionals in the field of college admissions to help answer all your questions and guide you through every step of the process. So if you're serious about college admissions, you've come to the right place. Are you ready? Let's talk about it. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Durante. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today Alex Hall, who's an admissions counselor at the University of Washington. Alex, so happy to have you here today. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's great to be here, John. Yeah, thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure, and we're happy to have you. So what is it, Alex, that you could tell us about the University of Washington that sets it apart from other institutions? And what aspects of the university do you believe make it attractive to so many prospective students?
Many people who are familiar just generally with education in the U.S., you know your flagship public institutions. So you might be thinking of Michigan or Texas or, I don't know, New York, like if you consider like Stony Brook the flagship or like Buffalo or, you know, whatever it would be.
Well, those and Binghamton. And ironically, I went to Stony Brook as an undergrad, so that's quite funny.
That's great. Yeah, my mom went to Fredonia.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing about UW is that, you know, we are the biggest public university and we're even the biggest university in Washington State. But even more than that, we really specialize in research. The numbers that I often tell students, and they're like 2021. I wasn't able to find more up-to-date numbers, but we are the public university with the third most research funding in the U.S. So UC San Francisco, which is a graduate-only program, and then University of Michigan is number two, and then we're number three. So nothing against University of Michigan, even though they beat us in football, but definitely lots of great institutions. But we really specialize in research. So I think for Washington students, if they want to come, you know, this is the biggest university in the state for them, you know, very prominent academics. But for out-of-state students as well, too, even among public universities, we really specialize in research, internships, extracurricular opportunities, all that kind of stuff.
Well, we appreciate that. And I'm curious, because you mentioned the out-of-state students. What percentage would you say are from out-of-state? Do you have a general ballpark on that?
I do, yeah. It changes from year to year. From the undergraduate population, this year about 75% of our students were in-state, and then the rest were either out-of-state domestic or international. About 15% were out-of-state domestic, and then the rest were international, so... would that be like 10-11% international, which 15% out of state domestic doesn't sound like a lot, but we also have 32,000-33,000 undergraduate students. So there actually are quite a few.
Yeah, definitely a nice size school. And, you know, one thing that I want to mention is the fact that your students are really happy once they come there, because I read that your retention rate is an amazing 93%, which means the percentage of students after that freshman year that return is 93%. 70%, of course, is around the national average. So, Alex, what's the secret to keeping all of those students happy and wanting to come back?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if it's one secret. One thing that I think is contributing to a lot of that is that UW is really the nexus for a lot of like programs here that you can't get anywhere else, at least in the Pacific Northwest. So for instance, we have an extremely renowned atmospheric sciences program, but we also have a very renowned business program. We have a very renowned computer science program, aerospace engineering. So there's like disparate programs. And for most students as well too, it actually can take a couple of years to get into the major. The nice news is that students are getting into their majors. They, you know, are coming back year two, able to get into their majors at that time. So, and they have the materials and the resources to do that. But I think a lot of people, you know, they do see the options that are available to them in their first year, like, oh, I want to come back for year two, especially since many of them actually aren't in their majors yet, too. We have a lot of that exploration that students can do.
Well, those are definitely a lot of great programs, and we'll unpackage different things about them in terms of the application review process. And of course, I was curious about just that.
Alex, could you walk us through the general process of how applications are reviewed at the University of Washington, including the key factors that you consider most important when evaluating your applicants?
So we're a selective institution, meaning that we have more applicants than we can admit. Like many selective institutions, we will look at essays, we will look at activities, we will look at awards, we will definitely look at grades from 9th through 11th, and then your courses that you've taken all throughout high school. So if you're applying as a 12th grader, you know, make sure to put those senior year courses on there. Unlike other selective institutions, that's pretty much it. We can talk about tests as well too later in the show, but those things that I just mentioned form the core of what we look at. So we're not looking at letters of recommendation. We're not looking at school profiles. We're not looking at, you know, if you have family members who went to UW, or we don't do admission interviews or anything like that. So it's actually a relatively small number of factors that we're considering. But within that, for the grades and the courses, we want to see students who, of course, are doing very well in their classes. But even if you don't have a 4.0, we're looking especially hard at the rigor of the classes that you've taken in your junior and senior year, especially. Are you spreading out some of those classes in different subjects like English, math, social studies, science, world language is really important for us as well, too. And then for the non-academics, the essays, the activities, the awards, we are just really looking for evidence of unique perspectives, maturity, responsibilities that are above the norm. So we really encourage you to put anything down on there. You don't just have to put a school club. You can put a part-time job. You can put something super informal. But we're really looking for evidence there. And our applications are due November 15th each year for fall, which means it's very early. It also means, too, that many students don't have their senior year grades by that point, even for first quarter, first semester. So we actually aren't looking at senior year grades at all in the process. But we do want you to talk about the classes that you're taking that year, because we're going to consider all of those too. I know that was not necessarily a chronological.
That's fine.
You're talking about how you work, but does that work?
It definitely works. You know, and a follow up to that, in terms of the senior year grades, I'm assuming that you want the students to explain the progression, right? The ramps that they built over 4 years. And of course, you're not seeing the grades in senior year. But if you could just elaborate on that in terms of, if I want to apply to the University of Washington, what are some of the things that I should be pointing out in terms of my course selections in senior year?
Absolutely. You are correct that progression of level is very important in our admission process. So if, for instance, like math, 9th grade, you're taking Algebra 1, 10th is Geometry, 11th is Algebra 2, 12th is Pre-Calculus, we're going to see that as a pretty normal progression of level. So even just reporting those courses on the application is great. However, if your school has maybe kind of an atypical progression, right? Maybe you have like Integrated Math 3, Integrated Math 4, or maybe you are in a physics class and optics is the like most advanced physics class. It can be helpful to mention some of those things in the additional information section of the application. We have that whether you do the Common App or whether you fill out our specific UW application. Just do one of those. But the additional information section is really helpful to understand what is the highest math. Are you taking the highest math course? Are you taking the highest English course that your school offers? You know, if your school doesn't offer AP or IB courses, what do advanced courses look like at your school? We do not expect students to give all the information that a counselor would give in a school profile, because we don't look at school profiles, but we just more want to understand, like, are you progressing in level? And if you feel like it's not 100% clear just from your grades and your classes, you can add that information in your application.
Well, that's great. And I'm glad I asked it as a follow-up. And earlier you said that you receive more applications than you could admit, which is the case in most colleges and universities. Alex, do you have an idea in terms of what is your freshman class? What is the goal in terms of the number of students that you want in that freshman class? And more importantly, how many overall applications ballpark do you receive?
Yeah, I can give you some rough numbers for this year and for last year too. So each year we try to enroll a class of about 7,000. So about 7,000 to 7,100 students. We admit more students than we enroll. So I think a common misconception, and I actually just saw it in our our UW newspaper too, is that we only admit 7,000 students. That's not true. We're admitting more students than we would enroll, because not everybody chooses to come here. This year, we received about 70,000 applications.
Wow.
Which, for context, 4 years ago, we received about 45,000 applications.
Wow.
More applications are definitely growing, for sure.
Sure.
The year 2023, for fall 2023, excuse me, we received about 63,000 applications. So we had about a 20% application increase 2 years ago. And then this past year, it was about a 10% application increase on top of that. So we're definitely getting a lot of applications. Our entering class, the numbers are remaining very similar, you know, 7,000, 7,100. Yeah, I mean, in terms of the students we're admitting, although we have become more selective over, you know, the past decade or so, we still are admitting thousands and thousands of students, you know, definitely more than 7,000.
Well, I appreciate that insight in terms of those numbers, because I want the students and their parents to hear it. Your goal is to admit a class, as you said, of approximately 7,000 to 7,100. Mm-hmm. And in the last rotation here, you received 70,000 applications. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just want students to hear that, because in the event that you're not admitted, you're getting 70,000 applications for only 7,000 seats. So obviously not everyone can be admitted. And just as a quick follow-up, do you know your yield? In other words, the number of students that actually attend who were accepted?
Yeah. Again, it is ballpark, because it changes from year to year.
Sure.
We are looking at Washington students and out of Washington students separately. We're considering them separately in the admissions process. So we look at those kinds of, like, who comes to UW, we look at those numbers separately. In a normal year, you can expect that most Washington students would come to UW who are admitted. Not the majority of out-of-state students who are admitted would come to UW, because they have a lot of other choices too.
Sure. Well, that's great. I appreciate that insight. And earlier you mentioned so many different programs, atmospheric sciences, business, CompSci, aerospace engineering. So, Alex, does the application review process differ if applying to one of these majors? In other words, if I'm applying to, I don't know, School of Nursing, are there any additional materials that I would need to submit specific to that program?
There are no additional materials that anyone needs to submit depending on the program. We do consider major as a factor. However, it's not going to be the primary factor. So if we have these conversations with some of the students we don't accept all the time. And, you know, they might say something like, well, if I had just put another major, would I have been accepted? And usually the answer is, you know, it would not have made that material of a difference. But it is something that we are considering. So, for instance, computer science. And I'm gonna give you a very shocking number. This is on the Computer Science School website. So this is public knowledge. Computer science in-state, only 25% of the students who put computer science as their first choice get into the program as a first-year student. Out-of-state, only 2% do.
Wow.
That's not to say that we have a 2% admit rate for students who put computer science. It's just to say only 2% of them end up getting into the program, like, right off of the application. So for a program like computer science, programs like engineering, some of our most popular ones that do have that direct admission pathway. Yeah, I mean, major is definitely a factor there, but we're not going to be requiring any additional materials. Students do not need to take computer science classes if they're interested in, like, putting computer science as their first choice. It's not going to increase their chances. Same thing with business, same thing with nursing. They don't have to take specific courses in those subjects. We've really, for everybody, we're just looking for, especially math, English, social studies, science, world language. Those are the top five academic core courses we would like to see.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And I would imagine that you're trying to level the playing field, which is why you're looking at the core, because those core courses that you mentioned are offered essentially in every single high school.
Correct.
Whereas you might not have a plethora, if you will, of business courses in a particular high school, whereas someone else's might have, you know, all of the business courses and more that you can imagine. Would that be accurate, Alex?
Yeah, it would be accurate. I mean, we understand that we're getting a lot of applications from a lot of different places. And as well, too, like, you know, if your school offers linear algebra, multivariable calculus, that's great. And we will consider that, but it's not to say that you know, if you only have pre-calculus that you can't be admitted to even, you know, like an engineering major or something like that, or a STEM major.
So
we like to see progression of level. We like to see rigorous courses from what your school offers. It does not need to be the most advanced course offered in the United States in order to be admitted to UW.
I appreciate that. And you did a nice job earlier talking about the increase in applications. And of course, in the last round, you had over 70,000 applications, which is unbelievable. So with an increase in those applications, how do you determine how many students to accept or even deny when you don't necessarily know, as we talked about earlier, how many of these applicants will actually attend?
Mm-hmm. The past 2 years have been interesting because, as I said before, we received, again, a 20% increase and then a 10% increase on top of that the next year. So, you know, we are getting a lot more applications than we ever have before. So it is uncharted territory in some ways. We will never know exactly how many students are going to accept. Still, I mean, we know roughly in the past how many Washington students have accepted, how many out-of-state students have accepted, and we tend to base our predictions on that. That being said, the wait list is also a very important part of that process. At many other institutions, including ours, nobody is going to be able to 100% predict like how many students are going to enroll and get it absolutely perfect, you know, hit right on 7,000 or whatever their goal is. So the wait list is there often so that students who are like really academically strong and are ready to enter UW, you know, they're on the wait list in some cases, but they would still be really good fits for UW. And so if it turns out that we didn't admit as many people as we needed to make our goals for the class, then we can use the wait list for that. The wait list is not, I mean, even though it's, if you get a wait list decision from UW, it means you're a fantastic student, means you're a really good student. That being said, being on the wait list does not necessarily mean that you will be admitted to UW. It means that you could be. For context, I think just off the top of my head, about 2,700 students were admitted off the wait list last year.
And that was admitted, you said, right? Admitted off the wait list.
Admitted off the wait list, yeah.
Right.
The year before that, we admitted 8 students off the wait
list. Wow.
So it really changes from year to year.
That's amazing. So
there's no, like, I have a 40% chance of being admitted off the wait list. There's nothing like that at UW because it really does change year to year.
Right. Well, I really appreciate you sharing those numbers because, you know, no one likes to go on the wait list. They either want to know, yes, I'm in, or it's not going to be. You know, earlier you talked about when you review, you're reviewing looking only at the major subjects, which I also think is very important for students applying to the University of Washington. So when reviewing applications, Alex, obviously the transcript is an important piece in terms of seeing how the potential student did academically while in high school. So what are you looking for when reviewing an applicant's transcript, and how does it differ based on their intended major, if at all?
Sure. So I said previously that we will look at 9th through 11th grade grades, and we're going to look at senior year coursework. So within that, as I've mentioned, we'll look at progression of level. We'll look at the courses that students are taking, how they're distributed. So, you know, are you taking a math class every year? Are you taking a science class, social studies class, world language class, English class? It's important to know. In Washington, this is actually unique compared to other states. We have entrance requirements for all public Washington colleges. If you would like to search for these, you can just Google CADRs or CADRs. And then any Washington college, and you can find this information. Most people are going to have no problem meeting these because it's 4 years of English, 3 years of math, science, and social studies, and 2 years of world language. So when we're looking at the transcript, we'll look for those. Have you met those requirements by the end of your senior year? So you don't have to meet them by the time you apply, but you have to meet them by the time you graduate. But if you go above and beyond those, if you take an extra year of math, you take 4 years of math, or you take 4 years of science, that's also something that we'll consider. Additionally, we'll look at grade trends too. So the class of students that was applying this year for fall 2024, I think it was the last class of students when they were going into high school, they were in kind of like peak pandemic in 9th grade. Mm-hmm. A lot of schools were virtual at that point. So it kind of makes sense that maybe ninth grade grades don't look the same as 10th grade or 11th grade.
Right.
So if we're seeing rises in grades, that's something we would positively consider as well too. Similarly to drops in grades as well. You know, we're looking, there are drops in grades. Is that student dropping, like getting a lower grade in like Algebra 1, or is it AP Calculus BC? Because those are different as well too.
Right. Yeah, it's all within the context of the course and how you're doing. And I appreciate in terms of what you're looking for, it's 4 years of English, 3 years of each math, science, and social studies, and 2 years of world language. And again, you mentioned if you go above and beyond that, obviously that's something that you'll take into consideration. Now, I know that you receive applications from thousands of high schools, right, throughout the country and beyond, as we discussed. When reviewing applications from so many different schools, how do you take into account when one school offers all of the AP or advanced classes you can imagine, while others may only offer a small fraction of that? So how does the application review process vary for students from these very different high schools?
Yeah, I think we actually, you had asked a very like prescient or prescient point about this a few minutes ago, about how you know, there are some schools that just offer a ton of things that like a lot of business classes or like computer science classes that other schools might not offer. But it's really those core classes, even though they're not the only things we look at, they are the primary things that we look at. And these are classes that pretty much any high school in the U.S. is going to at least offer in some case. So for some schools, you know, they could offer multivariable calculus, linear algebra. They could offer AP Physics C, AP Physics 2. Maybe other schools don't offer those. Those advanced classes, we definitely are considering them. So, you know, I don't want anybody to take away the message that if you take multivariable calculus in high school, that it's not going to count. We definitely will consider that. But as I also said before, even for a lot of our most competitive majors, or at least if you put that as your first choice, a student who has 4 years of progression in each subject, but is not taking like AP Calculus BC or like AP Physics C or post AP Physics, that can still be an admitted student. So we oftentimes, we like to see students cap out in their senior years at the some of the most rigorous courses that are offered. We're not tracking if it is the most rigorous course that your school offers. But as I said, the additional information section in the application can be a great place to say, hey, my school doesn't offer AP Calculus BC. We only have AP Calc AB, or here it's called just AP Calculus. This is the highest math my school offers. And that is something that, you know, if a student only has access to that, they still absolutely could be admitted, even if they put a lot of our STEM majors. Similarly, too, we don't look at school profiles. So if there are pieces of information that you as a student feel are important to add, for instance, my school only lets me take four AP classes a year, or we didn't, we usually offer IB math, HL analysis, but we didn't offer it this year. That's absolutely appropriate to put in the additional information section. It's typically not going to be something that's going to make or break an application, but it is helpful context, especially since we don't consider school profiles.
Yeah, and I appreciate you mentioning that you don't consider school profiles. So I guess it's very important, the letter that the school counselor provides. You do accept one of those?
We don't look at any letters that the counselor provides either.
Interesting.
Yeah, we're very limited in terms of the information that we provide, which I know can put a lot of onus on the student. So there are some negatives about that for sure. But the positives are that the student can determine like what's relevant to them, what should we know, and absolutely can talk about that in the application.
Well, I'm so glad that we're having this conversation because, yes, you know, you have to take agency, students, right? In terms of this marketing package, you want to make sure that you present the most comprehensive picture, not only of yourself, everything that you've done in the classroom and in terms of your activities, but also, as Alex said many times throughout the podcast episode here, if you need to explain certain contexts, for example, there's a limit in terms of how many advanced placement courses that you can take, you definitely want to indicate that in your application, which is, of course, very important. Alex, what about your philosophy, or I should say the University of Washington's philosophy regarding standardized testing?
Mm-hmm. We are test optional, but I'm sure, John, you've talked to many, many different college representatives, and many of them are working for test optional universities. And what that actually means might be completely different depending on the person you talk to. We are pretty close to what a lot of the like California public universities are, where even if you submit a test score, we rarely consider it. And I know like the UCs and the CSUs, at least of recording this, to my knowledge, don't consider it at all.
Yeah, they're test free. They don't consider exactly. it at all. You're 100% right.
Yeah. We're close to that. We're not all the way there. So definitely if students submit test scores, it's never going to hurt their application. There's a space to do it on the application. So you don't even need to send official test scores unless you want to show us scores that were taken after the application deadline. So from November 15th through December 31st is when you can send us official test scores if you like, but we rarely consider them. The times where it does help is if you score a very high test score and you were right on the bubble between like a waitlist or a deny or like an admit or a waitlist, that could be one factor that we would use to admit that student or waitlist that student as opposed to deny them. This does not happen very often. On our website, it says that we typically pay special attention to the scores that are above the middle 50% that are submitted. So that could change from year to year because we do actually have a lot of students submitting their test scores. In most cases, it makes no impact. In the past, typically a 1400 or above on the SAT or 31 or above on the ACT could be in that measurable range. But even if you have a 1400 on the SAT and you submit it, most cases we're not going to even consider it. We are more interested in your grades and your coursework academically than we are the SAT or the ACT.
Oh, I appreciate that. And I think I know the answer, but what about for some of your more competitive majors, for example, engineering? Do you have to submit test scores if you're applying to that major specifically?
You do not have to submit test scores to any major. In fact, we are actually the ones who are making the decisions on who gets directly admitted to, you know, our programs. The programs themselves, so computer science could say, we can take X amount of students this year to go directly into the program, but we're the ones who are reviewing the applications in our office. So computer science professor is not going to require that students have a 1600 on the SAT in order to be in that program, you know, anything like that. Yeah, so that's not a factor. That's not any difference. The only time that we actually do require test scores are when you are a homeschooled applicant and you have a year or fewer of graded coursework. So if you have less than a year's worth of graded coursework, we are going to require that SAT or ACT. Otherwise, it's you know, not required, in most cases not considered, no matter the major you put down.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I've been getting more and more emails actually from parents and students who are homeschooled. So again, thank you for bringing that up. And some schools report being test flexible. In other words, if you had the advantage of taking an AP course or courses in 11th grade and you have your advanced placement score, they say that, you know, they accept that because their policies are that they're test flexible. How about at the University of Washington? Would that ever come into play where students could actually submit an AP score, for example?
No, AP scores aren't considered in the process at all. So unlike SATs, ACTs, where, you know, maybe you could consider them, no AP scores are considered in the admissions process. For coming to UW, like if you come to UW and you have an AP, like a lot of AP tests that you've taken, that's great. You can transfer many of those to UW. Same with IB. Just for the admissions process, it has no effect.
Understood. I appreciate that clarification. And what support does the University of Washington offer its students to ensure that they continue to be successful once they're on your campus? And Alex, I ask this question not only for the students who may have had an IEP or a 504 plan, but for all of your students in general.
Yeah. I think that's a really key point to make, that these resources are for all students. So there were a couple that came to mind when you asked that question. Disability Resources for Students, or DRS. And then there's academic support. Academic support takes a lot of a variety of factors and shapes and forms at campus, but often students are using that for, it's called CLUE, is the C-L-U-E, is the tutoring center for a lot of our kind of like intro, like calculus and physics, mechanics, and, you know, general chemistry, biology, like a lot of those classes.
Mm-hmm.
These resources are open to all students. You do not need to have a 504 and IEP to work with disability resources for students. You do not need to be failing your general chemistry class to go to CLUE. Same thing with the Writing Center. And then our libraries, many departments offer tutoring and other sessions as well, too. So I worked before I went to the University of Washington at the previous university that I was a grad student at. I worked in the Writing Center, and it was such a rewarding experience because you would get people coming in with their PhD dissertations on computer science, like working on like natural language processing, and we would look at that. Then you'd also get a first year student who was in a like composition class, and we would look at that. It's helpful to everybody. And yeah, I have no stipulations about who uses that. I encourage people to do so. For disability resources for students, that one is definitely more if you're looking for like accommodations in certain classes. So if you have an IEP or a 504, it can be good to bring that as sort of a foundational document to help make those decisions. But even if you don't have one of those, again, you can reach out to DRS. I would just recommend doing so if you're admitted to UW as soon as possible, because it can take some time to work through that, kind of all the processes and procedures and things like that.
Well, that's great. And I always put the Office of Undergraduate Admissions in the show notes. Alex, if you have any other links, the DRS program or anything else, provide them to me. And of course, we'll make them available in the show notes to the students and their parents. What about aspiring student athletes, right? I mean, who doesn't like sports, right, Alex? I mean, how does the application process differ for them? And do you have any advice for prospective student athletes?
Yeah, this is an interesting question to ask at this moment in history, because UW was in the national like football title game, you know, for awesome. College against Michigan. And I wonder, you know, if a lot of people kind of heard about UW that way. But UW has many other sports as well, too, besides football. We are an NCAA D1 Division I school. We offer men's and women's sports and a variety of things. We're also known for rowing. So there was that movie, The Boys in the Boat. It was about the UW rowing
team. That's awesome.
Yeah, so definitely we have a lot of different sports. You can actually go, and I'm happy to provide this as a link. You can go on gohuskies.com. So that's G-O Huskies, gohuskies.com, and see all of our NCAA teams. If people are wondering about the recruiting process, sometimes coaches will visit schools and, you know, you'll know about you from camps and things like that. But oftentimes people will just reach out to the coaches directly. On most of the pages on gohuskies.com, there is a recruit questionnaire or some kind of recruiting portal. So that's one way to get the conversation started. You know, you can give your numbers and measurements and things like that. And, you know, they can get that in their database. If somebody is a recruited athlete at UW, the application process is the same, but the application timeline might be different. For instance, if coach has reached out to somebody in a particular sport and they need to come in for like winter quarter or something like that. So there could be, depending on the sport, depending on the student, it could be a different timeline, but it's always the same process. It always comes from through the Office of Admission. If you have questions about the particular recruiting process, I think the coach is the best resource for that. But if you have questions about like, how do I apply to UW as a recruited athlete? We are the best ones to answer that, because it's going to be our application that you would fill out.
Well, I appreciate that. And I always remind students to check the NCAA website as well for the most up-to-date rules in terms of recruitment. And so, Alex, this has been an awesome conversation. I think we covered a lot, but I am curious, is there a question I didn't ask today or a topic that I simply didn't bring up that you'd like to share with us now?
I actually would like to talk about something we discussed way at the beginning, which is the timeline to get into majors at UW. This might seem like kind of a niche topic, but it is actually a very important part of the process here at UW. And if you're considering the University of Washington, it is something to keep in mind. That 93% retention rate is fantastic because we have a lot of people coming back for their second year. And in fact, that is kind of the process at UW, is people can take a quarter to figure out the major they want to go into and go right in. People can take a year to do that. By the end of your second year, that's when we would require you to be in a major. But unlike many universities across the country, most students don't actually enter with a major. The reason why I wanted to bring this up now is because a lot of the students that we're admitting, they are fantastic students. They're taking so many great classes. Their essays are so wonderful, and wonderful activities, have won a lot of awards, are, you know, very active in their community. They're the perfect applicant, for many schools, not just us. And, they put neuroscience as their first choice, and they get their admission letter and it says pre-sciences, and they're like, oh no, I'm never going to get into my program. Actually, neuroscience is probably a bad example because it's a small program. It's not as competitive as some of our programs at UW, but maybe even a better example would be like biology. Biology is our largest program at UW. It has the most seats. But everybody who puts biology down on the application as of this taping is, if they're admitted, they're going to be pre-sciences. That's the thing that they see on their application, their admittance letter. That's not a bad thing. It's how UW is structured. People typically will come to UW and then apply into, or even just waltz right into their major, declare their major by the end of their second year. So it's a university that really rewards and values exploration, because somebody thinks biology because they might not have a lot of exposure to other majors. But we also offer microbiology, we offer bioengineering, we offer medical laboratory sciences, public health, environmental public health. So there's a lot of things like, yeah, you might not know a lot of these majors, and so you think biology. But just know that you can get into biology or many of our other majors. There is a process to do that. It's just not immediate. So, you know, I think for most majors, don't be crestfallen if you get pre-sciences or pre-arts, pre-humanities. And many cases, that's the only thing that you can get, because it's by design, and most students are going to get into those majors anyway. I'd say that the two to watch out for, though, would be computer science and then any of our engineering majors. Those programs, the majority of them do direct admission. If you don't get into computer science right away, or you don't get into engineering right away, it is still possible to do that. It's just not as likely as some of our other majors. So I would recommend, if you were really interested in computer science, computer engineering, really interested in any of our other engineering ones, put that as your first choice. That's going to give you a chance to get in directly. And then if you don't, you know, you can make that choice when you're reviewing all of your other admission offers.
Well, I appreciate you talking about your direct admit programs, but also explaining, for example, if a student wants to be a biology major, they may be accepted as a, as you put it, a pre-science major, right? Mm-hmm. And that's because I'm assuming that first year, as you mentioned, is the exploratory period. We know that a lot of students change their majors. So it's giving them, I guess, is it 1 year to really explore and then really get into the major?
Biology is a really good example of one that takes about 1 year. If you have not completed any collegiate classes at all, it's going to take about, because we're on the quarter system, so it would take about three quarters to meet the requirements to get into that. But you're not like extending the amount of time that you would be in school. It just means that, you know, you would get into your major maybe by the end of your first year, or maybe by the end of your second year, but you would still graduate in 4 years if that's your timeline.
Understood. And you mentioned the quarter system. So for someone that might not know, could you just elaborate a little bit in terms of exactly what that is?
Absolutely. We do three quarters per year here, per academic year. So fall, winter, and spring. Typically in a quarter, in our quarter system, you would take three classes per quarter. And that would be 5 credits typically per class. So taking about 45 credits a year. If you are coming from a semester school, you know, you might take 4, maybe even 5 classes a semester. So the benefit of going to a quarter school is that you're taking fewer classes at a time. They are accelerated. So a calculus 1 course on the quarter system lasts 10 weeks. Whereas at a semester school, it might last 14, 15 weeks.
Right.
So yeah, there's, it's really great for people who want that accelerated kind of timeline in their courses, but also don't want to be taking as many. And then one really great thing about it is that spring quarter ends early June. Fall quarter, the next fall quarter, doesn't actually pick up until late September. So if you don't do any summer quarter classes, which is, you know, not mandatory, you have your vacation from early June to late September, which is great. Yeah, it's great.
That is great, without a doubt. And another thing that's been great is this conversation, Alex. I am so happy to have you. Unfortunately, it does lead us to that last question, which is, what are your top three pieces of advice that you would provide a student and their parents getting ready for the college admissions process?
Sure. I'm going to give, in those three, some pieces of advice that apply to UW and some that apply to everybody. So the one that I would say applies to UW the most, look at all of the majors that we have before submitting your application. As we've talked about on this podcast, the choice of your major is not going to have a big impact or any impact on your application, but it can let you know, what is my life probably going to look like? You know, if I want to do microbiology versus biology, you can switch majors at any time. So it's not like you're locked into a major, but I think knowing before you apply makes such a difference in terms of your like understanding and enjoyment of the application process. So I'd say that's number one. And I'm happy to drop a link of our majors.
That would be great
with you as well too. The other two things, number two, this is for us, but also speaking as an admissions counselor who's worked at other universities, when you are writing your essays, focus on evidence. You can use that kind of thing that you've heard in creative writing classes, show, don't tell. So we're asking you to tell us a story, but we want you to show us basically evidence of leadership, passion, perseverance, care for others. Not all of those things, but I mean, if you have one of those things or even something else, some other unique experience, show us. So, for instance, you can show us a story of when you lived in a cabin in the woods for 10 years with no running water, you know, take us there, as opposed to saying, I have overcome adversity or I have a unique experience. So we want to be there with you. That's really going to help admission readers. And then finally, the last piece of advice that I would give is, it's inherently going to be a stressful process. I think especially if you're applying to a lot of different schools, but I mean, see it as an opportunity to get to know some of these schools a little bit. Just know that, you know, even though you might have one dream school or, you know, a couple dream schools, there might be schools that you discover that really surprise you in many ways too. You know, kind of that point that I made that people interested in biology might not know that some schools offer medical laboratory sciences and things like that. So the application process is going to be stressful. Hopefully I'm here to make it as stress-free as possible. And so are your counselors. But after you submit your applications, I mean, take some time to get to know the universities a little bit, go on the websites. If you get a chance to visit, go ahead and do it. And I think hopefully that should give you more information that can arm you, you know, when you get your decisions back, and then you can just sit back and look at the different admission offers that you're getting and financial aid that you're getting. And so you don't feel like you have to make that snap decision because you've already done a lot of the work.
Well, these have been awesome pieces of advice and a tremendous conversation, Alex. I can't thank you enough. I do hope to have you again because I'm so happy, as I know that this conversation is going to help so many students and their parents as they navigate through the process. Take care, Alex. You were awesome.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much for the platform. I hope you have a good rest of your day.
You too. This was great. And to everyone out there, good luck as you navigate the college process. Take care, everyone, and best wishes.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP.
Thank you for listening to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to PrepExpert.com to guarantee your child's success.